Welcome to the Working Genius Podcast, where we discuss anything and everything related to the six types of working genius and how it impacts your work and your life. I'm Pat Lincioni, your host, joined by Cody Thompson, my co-host. Hello, Cody. How you doing?
Great. Right before we started, Pat, you said, let's go for awesome. So let's do it. Let's go for
awesome.
We're
going to try to make, we think this could be an awesome podcast, or there's a chance that we're going to have to re-record it later. And Tracy and Matt will let us know. How are you doing, Tracy?
I am great today. I'm actually sitting here staring at a copy of your book in front of me. We just got it today.
Box came yesterday. We opened it. The book looks beautiful. We're so excited about the Six Types of Working Genius book, which comes out September 27th.
But you can buy it now.
That's right.
I'm just going to throw that in there.
Yes, you can. That's right. We've got Matt on the engineering keyboard there. Matt, how you doing? Thumbs up. We got Karen in here helping me today. She's a little extra adult supervision, keeping me on track. And Cody, what is our topic today?
Every pairing has a rough edge.
That's right. We're going to call it the dark side of working of your working genius, but that sounded too mean or ugly and sad and dark. It's the truth of the matter is, though, it's really interesting to understand. And this is not about our frustrations. This is about even every genius pairing has a potential downside. And the people that work with us know that. We know that. And we want to talk about these and kind of figure out for every working genius pairing what that might be. So we're going to go through all 15 of these very quickly. But what we want to say is this. Remember, though, the letters are more important. Knowing that you're a W and an I is more important than knowing that you're a creative dreamer. Having said that, once you do get the pairing down and you know what that means, it's very powerful. And we're hearing from so many people that once they understand their pairing, it really, really comes together. And that's exciting. So is that enough of a preamble, Matthew?
Looks good.
Up from Matt. All righty. So we're going to go through these one at a time.
Let's throw it to Tracy. Tracy's going to tee them up for us. And then you and I can go through the dark side, the rough edge of each one.
And let's remind everybody that celebrating your limitations is actually a great way to celebrate your strengths. And what we find is that the more people can say, oh yeah, I have things about me that come from my genius that are sometimes not great, it allows them to completely, fully receive all the goodness of their genius. Mm-hmm. So we might not get all these perfectly right. We always love to hear from people, but this is our best attempt at understanding the rough edges associated with every pairing. Here we go.
All right. Let's start with the W-I-I-W, the creative dreamer.
Yes. Okay. So I'll take this one because my wife and some of my favorite people in the world are W-I's. I was talking to my wife about this just today, and it is, we love creative dreamers. Okay, we got to be fast about this. But on the downside, they can sometimes not really value practicality as much as they value originality. And so their focus on implementation is limited by their idealism and ingenuity. So sometimes they're not that realistic and they're not that practical in their thinking. And this can lead to stress and chaos among the people around them who might at times be moved forward. They're like further in the process. They're like, I'd like a little realism and actionability here. And so sometimes you have to say to the WI, I was telling one of my best friends today who's a WI, hey, we're going to have a meeting later today. I need you to leave your W behind because we're beyond that. And we need to get into practical decision-making, and that's not his strength. So there's the rough edge for the creative dreamer whom we love.
Yeah, and I love that you had said before, I mean, Chris Stefanik has been on this podcast. I think he's self-declared that sort of the rough edge, his rough edge is chaos maker. And you can, creative dreamers can constantly be exploring the environment with the wonder side of their genius and then inventing solutions. And more often than not, they have a notebook of new ideas or companies they should start or products that they should design. And very little of them ever make it past the wonder invention phase.
You know, twice I've been just literally getting on stage to present something with Chris. And he says, hey, I have an idea. Maybe we should change the... And I was like, dude, we're going up there in 30 seconds. Stop. And he laughs. Oh, I know. I'm WI-ing again. So this is the rough edge of the WI.
Yep.
All righty.
Awesome. Let's go to WD, DW, the contemplative counselor.
Now, Matthew, our engineer, is one of these. So we're going to rip on Matt right now. No, this is everyone has one of these. So Cody, what's the potential downside of the contemplative counselor?
Yeah. So think of like wonder and discernment together. That's the W and D. So wonder is that exploration and constantly observing the environment. And then discernment is sort of the discriminatory evaluating of ideas. So what can happen when those ping pong back and forth is because of their proclivity, they have this like proclivity to nuance. They're really, really, the wonder is that high level thinker and then the D being so nuanced that they can be sort of lack certainty or really be uncomfortable with declaring or landing on a specific thing.
Even when it seems like they deserve to, it's like, hey, you, there's plenty of knowledge there. You've got this. Be really strong in your opinion.
Right.
They can sometimes question themselves.
And I would bet if we said like, hey, Matt, what is the best movie of all time? He would be like, well, you can't actually answer that. You know, like there's so much nuance to why certain movies are good above other ones. Like, so, and he'll even do that when we're thinking about podcast episodes. He'll be like, well, that's a good thing, but what about this? And so they have a hard time sort of landing the plane, even on discernment sometimes. Like they think that there's micro ways to make it better. So like right. they will constantly be trying to wonder and discern to make it even better than it is.
And that's what makes them such a good contemplative counselor. They see things in depth and nuance. But then again, at times when you're like, just land on something, they're like, well, it's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. So,
you feel beaten up, Matthew?
I'm not sure.
Great answer.
Like, there's more to it than that, but yeah.
Oh, great answer. Okay, what's next, Trace?
The WGGW, the philosophical motivator.
So far, with more than a quarter of a million, far more now than a quarter of a million people that have taken this, this is the most rare type. Mm-hmm. So this we call them the philosophical motivator, as you said. And it's interesting. They have this interesting mix of impulsivity or unpredictability. That's the G part. But then they go back and forth between that and cautious reflection. And my favorite story about a friend of mine, Daniel, who is a WG, here's how I described it. He would, like, if we were kids on a playground and there was a bully that was bullying me or picking on a bunch of us, he'd be the guy going, Pat, get out there. You can kick his butt. Take him on. Go ahead. You could do it, Pat. You could do it. And then as I took a step toward the bully, he goes, but he might kill you. He might kill you, though. You just keep that in mind. You know, it's like they're both really philosophical and thoughtful, but they're also like, let's do it. And so sometimes they can go back and forth between pushing and cautioning. And yeah. It can be a little bit crazy making. But,
you know, I actually have a good friend who's a WG, and when he heard the label, in fact, he was kind of wondering if he had another letter as instead of W. And when he heard the label, him and his wife, the philosophical, philosophical motivator, she was like, no, that's you 100%. And here's how it plays out in his world. He's self-employed, but literally once a month, somebody will talk about another business and he'll go, oh, I want to do that one. Or like, so three times this month, he has talked to me about a new business idea that he's galvanizing because they see the wonder sees all these needs in the world. And then they get so excitable about the ones that they start championing them all at once. So I like that word sort of impulsive. It does feel like they can be bouncing between a lot of things they seem excited about.
Yeah. It's fun to celebrate these things. It's great. Because, you know, when you celebrate somebody's rough edges, it's another way of loving them. And it's another way of saying, and in spite of that, there's so many good things that I can just literally be happy about and celebrate in you. What's next, Trace?
The WEEW, the idealistic supporter.
Right. So we have a guy in our office, Tim, who's one of these. My son, Michael, is one of these. This is... I'm not going to tell everybody. Tracy came up with a name for them.
Shh, don't tell anyone.
Which was not mean because we love these people. But they have this deep desire to please others. And because their W is a depth about them and seeing the needs around them. And so that can sometimes make them overly deferential. And they hesitate to initiate change or to push back on things. They prefer to let others make the first move. And sometimes they can get taken advantage of. In fact, they often can because they're sensitive and deep thinkers and they want to please others. And so they will let themselves be taken advantage of far longer. Okay, I'm going to tell them. Tracy said that, because I realized it's not that bad. Like, they can be kind of an angsty doormat at times. Mm-hmm. And they're such lovable, helpful, wonderful, deep, thoughtful people. And sometimes they have to realize it's okay to stand up for myself and push back.
Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, you break it down between the W and the E. The wonder is, they're both responsive, by the way. So the wonder is constantly thinking about the needs and untapped potential of the environment and the world. Right. And that's that deep thinking, like a care and concern for people or things that could be better. And then this deep desire to walk alongside other people with the E as the enablement genius. And so they're constantly responding to the needs of others and the needs of the world. And so they can take on quite a bit, feeling like, boy, I have to volunteer for anything that could have a benefit others or benefit the people in those environments that I'm in. So I like the idea that probably that rough edge is overcommitting and a really deep care and concern that can maybe feel like a burden to them.
And always there for others.
Yeah, without necessarily taking care for themselves or advocating for themselves.
Yes. And you know what? That's the beauty of going over the rough edges, is because when we're on a team or in community and family, we need to recognize that other people have their rough edges, and sometimes that can leave them open to pain. And so we need to remind them that, you know, hey, this is okay for you to protect yourself. Mm-hmm. And so even though we joke about it, this, when you work with a WE, make sure that they don't feel afraid to stand up for themselves.
Yep.
Love it. All okay, right. Last W. Let's do WTTW, the careful implementer.
Now, this one is so interesting because the W and the T are furthest apart. So they live in a world that's half at 50,000 feet and half at 5 feet. And mm-hmm. It is the most discrepant, if you will, their most divergence. And as a result of that, these people often feel great angst in the midst of a project. And it's almost an overwhelming desire to both get things done and then to slow down and consider the macro implications of everything. Yeah. And it really does create quite an internal tension for them.
I don't think my father-in-law listens to this podcast, so it's a safe space, but he is a WT. And that, what you just described, sort of that angst, because when we talk about elevation, like you said, we talk about the turbulence that people experience when their genius is a little
right.
far apart. And this is the most amount of turbulence. So going from big picture questioning wonder all the way down to tenacity, it does feel like a fits and spurts sort of experience for people that is that the right phrase? Fits and spurts? Is that?
I think so. Or spits okay. and farts. It's not spits yeah. and farts. I know that.
Isn't it fits and starts?
That's probably what it is. I get those wrong regularly, but the idea that, you know, he lived in our home for a little while, and he was his desire to finish projects. And so he'll start one. And then even in the midst of that, wonder like, should I be doing this differently? Was there a better way to do this? And sort of just ping-ponging back and forth between the wonder and tenacity is a hallmark of a WT's rough edge, I
think. Yeah, and it wasn't like he was stopping to consider things and it was causing him stress.
Right.
That's the thing. There's this internal stress they feel trying to manage both ends of the scale.
Well, and I'll just say one last thing. They bought a home here, and this is the classic tenacity wonder ping pong: is buy a home, sign the papers, move in, and then he would get on Redfin and still look at all the homes that were coming up in the area and like, what if we bought that? I'm like, no, you have to delete the app now. You're done with that, you know?
Yeah. So the W part of this activity is over.
Yeah.
And that's hard. That one, more than anyone, probably has to be able to say, let's shut part of it down depending on where we are.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Which is hard to do. The careful implementer. Okay.
All right, let's move on to IDDI, the discriminating ideator. Pat, this is you.
This is me. And here's the thing. We always say it kindly. They can sometimes appear blah, blah, blah. It's like, I would say I can often appear impatient and overconfident when people push back around something, because I've thought about it and I've really discerned this ideation I have. So if people come at me right away with like, no, this is why it won't work, I will sell it a little too hard and mm-hmm. I will be a little impatient with them. And so that's one of the downsides. It's like when they don't throw ideas out there. Often people will say to me, it's, I know you're inventing, but it sounds like you're galvanizing because I've already discerned something. And so I can be impatient and overconfident at that moment. I can also move on and lose interest in things after the initial, after the ideation and discernment is over. I can often kind of go, okay, done with that, and underestimate what needs to happen in the GET phase.
And this is why I think the word we chose, that discriminating ideator, is really interesting, because what that means is you're not just throwing noodles against the wall to see which one fits. You've actually already done the discriminating part of this. So when you present an idea, you're like, and it's met with a little bit of like skepticism or pushback, it almost can feel irritating to be like, well, no, you didn't think that I thought of that already. Like, I've already done some of the vetting around this. I'm not just in it. Like, if someone were just inventor without that secondary discerner piece to this combination, they're open to like all the feedback in the world, because they're like, I like to just throw things against the wall. But the discriminating ideator is the person that's like, oh, I actually did the internal vetting. I'm only telling you ideas that I think are pretty good.
And so that's what makes me impatient. And that's my own issue. I need to be patient with other people needing to kind of go through that process. Yep. But I kind of just want to go, oh, just trust me, it'll work.
All right, let's move on to the IGGI, the evangelizing innovator.
Yes, this is such a fun type to talk about, because we know, Karen's husband has this, Bo on our team has this. Mm-hmm. You know, the rough edge for them is an interesting one, that I know so many IGs, and almost to a person, they're some of my favorite people. But when I first meet them, they come across as a slightly disingenuous, because it's hard to believe that anybody can be that enthusiastic about anything. Mm-hmm. And so I think, is this sincere? And then every time I'm like, oh, these people are totally sincere. I love them, but it takes me a while to get through, because they are so over the top in their excitement about every new idea, and they're galvanizing you to take action, that sometimes you wonder, are you trying to convince me of something that's not good for me? It's, they're actually sincerely interested in selling these great ideas.
Yeah.
What do you think, Cody?
Yeah, it's a thing. The invention and galvanizing are both double disruptors. They're disruptive geniuses. So they, you know, and my brother is one, Bo, that I work with every day is one. And so they can often, that evangelizing innovator, they're constantly innovating, even after you've decided maybe this is the way forward. And so like, in even personal relationships with my brother, we think we've landed the plane on a decision, or maybe it's our birthday or where we're going to go on vacation. And constantly there's a micro innovations like, oh, well, what if we did this, or we should change it and do this. So that can come across as being a little bit too disruptive and sort of harder to land the plane and feel like, oh, we've already made that decision and we're past that.
Right. Yeah. Karen just added that it can come across as careless or hasty. And now, one of the things I've noticed about them, which I love, is that unlike me, who's discerned everything, and so I'm a little annoyed when somebody pushes back, you can push back on them all day long. They're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, totally.
So that's the thing about the evangelizing innovator. All right, what's next, Trace?
The IEEI, the adaptable designer.
Yes. Okay, Cody, you had a good one about this, because these are the most... It's hard to come up with the rough edge, because they help you, they're creative, and they're super pliable, and they want to please you. So when they come up with an idea and they're good at it, and you say, well, what about this? They go, oh, I'll incorporate that. Yeah, I'll do that too. That's a great idea. And so we were like, what are we going to say that's negative? And then Cody, you came up with one.
Well, I know an actual designer who is an IE, so it has invention and enablement. And they love the creative process of like new ideas so much, and they love helping so much, that after about a week working on a website project with him, I started a meeting and said, hey, if you say that's a great idea one more time, we're going to have to stop the meeting, because I need you to at least say that's a terrible idea once during this meeting. And because they love the ideation process, and they're so wanting to help that they can be a little quick to just jump right in, instead of, oh, maybe we should evaluate that a little bit more.
Yeah, and probably they don't argue for their point of view very, because they want to accommodate. And so that can leave them feeling underappreciated and undervalued. And so it's kind of like, nope, don't just accommodate me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You have great ideas. advocate for those.
Totally.
All right. Not a very negative thing, but yeah. It's real. Tracy, this is a good one for you next, right?
Oh yeah. This is the ITTI, the methodical architect.
Yeah. Tracy's son is this. We know a lot of ITs. I've worked with a lot of ITs over the years. They can be so dogged in their pursuit of a solution that works, that's practical. They can sometimes miss the nuances of something, often do, and the human needs that are involved. So they can be more like, well, it works perfectly here. Look at, I've designed this. And it's like, well, human beings are not that predictable.
Yeah.
They're like, well, they should be. So this is going to work.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that I've noticed that's not really in our notes, but because they invent a new thing and they have tenacity, they often go alone. They will just invent and then go right to implementation. And they're like, well, I don't need other people in this process. So I have an idea and I know how to get it done. And so that can really lead them to feel like maybe they're more siloed on a team, or they can feel a little like a lone ranger potentially on teams.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And they don't even quite understand the impact that has on others, because they're like, but it's going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's that nuance. All righty.
All right. Let's move on to the DGGD, the intuitive activator. Cody, this is you.
I think probably no downside. What do you guys think? Right. What do you guys think?
Well, to be fair, and this was more just an internal joke between you and Matt. But Matt used to refer to you as a pushy douchebag, which is a college kind of thing. But the douchebag part I didn't get. But they can sometimes be a little cavalier in their declarations of what is true and what is good, and can dismiss others when there's more nuance involved. They can be like, nope, good enough. I know the answer. I'm right. Let's go.
Yep.
And again, that's a wonderful thing most of the time. But there can be times when being cavalier and overconfident and considering all the details, they can be a little impulsive and declarative. Does that make sense, Cody?
Completely fair. My wife would say the same thing. So yes.
Got it. And again, we want to keep saying, do never throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Always keep the baby. And even if you keep the bathwater and you have to, there's the downsides, that is better than throwing out the baby with the bathwater. But whenever you can get rid of the rough edge, that's okay, but embrace it. Embrace it and say, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next we get to one I love to talk about.
The DEED, the insightful collaborator.
This is me. Karen and Tracy, the insightful collaborator. What could be wrong about them?
Well,
sometimes they lean into that E a little too much and can please people and want to affirm people. And then they ultimately get overworked and they get kind of taken advantage of. Because they're always, I can do that for you. I can do that for you. And the problem is, because they have such good discernment, they kind of know, and they have this conflict. I know this isn't probably the right thing, but I just can't turn my E off, and I'm going to do this for this person, even though I know it's probably not the best thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that creates a lot of stress in them. And then eventually, when it comes out that they weren't really on board or they were frustrated by something, then people are kind of surprised because they're so nice throughout the process.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would Greg say is true about this, Tracy?
I think he would say yes and yes. I think we can be overly deferential. We want to please others so much. And because we know the right answer oftentimes, or we think we know the right answer, that could lead eventually to maybe some resentment or bitterness. I would say there is, you know, if it happens time and time again, there is like this bitterness that comes into play.
And people are like, well, where did that come from? And you're like, well, don't you know I've been harboring this for the last 6 months?
You know,
I've just been keeping it inside.
One of the things that I feel like we don't say this often, and you can erase this if you feel like this is wrong, but I think we're all on the same page around this, is the working genius happens in sequential order. And sometimes what happens is when you use a letter that falls later before your earlier letter in the widget model. So like, in other words, Tracy's downside sometimes can be using her enablement before she uses discernment, you know, like that it is a more of a magnetic pull earlier. And so leading with discernment actually is helpful for her.
Yep.
Yes. And sometimes I will say, hey, I want your discernment more than your enablement right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, in meetings, when Tracy goes, crap, I'm getting kind of frustrated. I get really excited because I'm like, oh, okay, now we're going to get full discernment from her. I really do. It's like a relief to me when she says that. So I love that. What's next, Tracy?
The DTTD, the judicious accomplisher.
This is one of those super valuable people in an org. I mean, all of these are valuable. And the downside is really interesting. So Cody, we have one on our team. Julie, your wife is one. We know a lot of Bo's wife is one. DTs are so good at, like, they have angst around getting things done, but sometimes that angst, they can be more worried about something not happening, and they can get, we call it judicious, which is wonderful, but along with that can be judgmental. And they'll tell us that. They'll say, oh yeah, when other people aren't meeting my standards, I do judge them and I get pretty grumpy about that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. The whole discernment of, like, I know what the right thing is to do, and then the tenacity, like, I can finish it. And then they often look at other people who don't have those two and go, why isn't this easy for you? My wife, where I have zero tenacity, this is a conversation we've had. And they're so, you know, relentless around the standards and especially expectations. I would say that too. Like, the idea that, for example, if we give Julie a deadline on something, she is almost more motivated internally of herself around guilt of missing that deadline than any of us would make her feel bad for. You know, so they have this real sense of responsibility that can sometimes be, that can be a rough edge. And on top of that, goes back to sort of the point I made with Tracy, is they need to make sure they're leading with discernment before tenacity, because sometimes if tenacity leads, then it can be a list of, they have a hard time prioritizing. So if they, if they lead with discernment, prioritizing and then finishing is great. If they lead with tenacity, it can be like, just go right to finishing in any order.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why the both letters are so important, because a DE and a DT have very different impacts. Yep. So that second letter we're thinking about really does shape this. The other thing about DTs is that I love when we talk to Julie about it, because she's so valuable, because we know she's going to get stuff done. But it's so funny when we said, she's very friendly, but do you get judgy with us? She goes, oh, of course, I'm judging people all the time when they don't have the same level of tenacity I have. And it was like great that she admitted that, because we can kind of sense it, but she's so nice, she doesn't want to say it, but it's out there.
Julie said to me the other day on a call, do you want to not like me because I make us hit this deadline, or do you want to not like me because I make us make this perfect? And I was like, well, I don't want either. I want both, you know?
That is great. That is great. Okay, the enthusiastic encourager is next, Tracy, right?
G-E-E-G.
That's right. This is the most positive of all the people, because and the enthusiastic encourager, when we came up with that that pairing, I thought, is this even a thing? But that is exactly what it is, because they are so positive and so desiring to affirm and encourage others that they can sometimes come across as insincere, or that their encouragement can lose its value because they're like, yeah, way to go. So I got out of bed this morning. Way to go. Good for you for getting out of bed. You know something? I'm going to do a cheer for you. You know what I mean? They can be so over the top in their desire to affirm people, which is fantastic, that sometimes they can actually lose the impact of what they're doing. And people can perceive them as being naive or insincere, which they're not, but that's kind of the rough edge. Is that right,
Kurt? Right. They're so, like, supportive and motivational in the same. So the supportive is the E, the enablement, and the motivational is the G, that I feel like, you know, if I woke up, or if I was in a room with this GE that I know, and I said, hey, I think I want to sail to New Zealand and be a shepherd, they'd be like, yeah, that's awesome, you should do that. And I'm like, wow, next thing I know, I have a sailboat, you know, because they're so supportive and motivational around that. So,
right. And it's important for them to realize, and don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No. Mm-hmm.
But it's sometimes you can just do and go, you know, I love to encourage people. You might come to me with an idea, and you might want to talk to a D also.
Yeah.
Now, it might have been a better idea, because New Zealand shepherd, they do have tons of sheep there. but it would be easy to encourage you on that. What's next, Tracy?
All right. We've got the GTTG, the assertive driver.
This one is easy. It's another, it's the double disruptive. Yeah. So it's easy to come up with the rough edges, but we want to make sure that people understand everyone has rough edges. And sometimes your rough edges are that you're too nice or you're easily taken advantage of. Those are hard. This one's the rough edges that they can be just plain pushy and, and a little domineering. Now, here's the thing. People love them in an organization because they get stuff done and they get other people to get stuff done. So we don't want to make it look like this baby is smaller and the bathwater is greater. It's not. It's just easier to see the bathwater because it's way out there on the outside.
Yeah. I mean, as the pushy douchebag, this is my favorite rough edge, the assertive driver, because not only are they a little, they're in line with me, but they actually get it done. Like, we have Jackie on our team who's an assertive driver. And basically, you could just say, hey, Jackie, I need you to kick down three of these doors so that we can get this done. And you just wind them up, point them in that direction, and it's great. But sometimes that can go a little too far, you know?
Right. And then we can go, hey, you kicked me when you kicked the door. Like, yeah, I mean, the door was coming down. If you were close to it, that's your fault. You know, it's like, fair enough. But yeah, they can be impatient and a little bit impatient with brainstorming and thinking about things because they're like, let's just get things done. Come. We always say Jackie's thing is, come on, people. She claps her hands. Come on, people, let's go. And usually the people I know who are GTs, they know this about themselves. Most people know all of this about themselves.
Yeah.
But theirs is so easy to observe that it's pretty so impatient, a little pushy. But please don't stop pushing.
Yeah, seriously.
What's our last one?
All right. Our last one is ETTE, the loyal finisher.
The most common type, not that it's 50%, you know, none of these are overwhelmingly the most, but this is, I think in the world of work, this is such a valuable person that they're probably many organizations have them and need them. And your husband is one. We love ourselves some ETs, loyal finishers. What can you not love about them? What's the problem? Tracy, I'm going to let you do this one. What's the rough edge around an ET?
Well, it's impossible for them to say no to anything.
But what's the downside?
that is the downside, let me tell you. They overcommit themselves to everything. My husband says no to nothing. And he easily gets burned out. The burnout is high because he's constantly going. He's constantly doing favors for people. He's constantly completing tasks. So there's the burnout thing and the lack of appreciation.
Right.
That happens.
They can get martyred. I don't mean that in a bad word, but they can be the one that just gets crushed. Now, and they don't say yes just to make somebody happy in the moment. They actually complete things. They don't give up. If they volunteer, they're going to see it through all the way.
Yep.
The visual for me is like if everyone had a to-do list and an ET is walking around just picking up everything that falls off of everybody else's to-do list, like I can help with that. I know how to help with that. I know you need help with that. And so they can sort of, without even being asked, often overcommit themselves just because they have such a sincere desire that enablement kicks in and then their desire to finish things. So it's just sort of a natural play of those two geniuses.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And those are all 15 pairings, the rough edges. And I'm not going to say again that they should not throw the baby out with the bathwater. That would be repetitive, wouldn't it? I should say this. IDs over-communicate. That's my type. I do over-communicate. Every one of my kids, my wife, my friends, the people I work with, certainly Matt, my son, will say, yeah, I know that. So I'll end it with my rough edge. In addition to being impatient sometimes and overconfident and moving on before it's done, I tend to repeat myself a lot.
We went for awesome, Pat. We tried. We tried our best. Tracy, you can decide.
I think this is interesting. I don't think we made anybody feel too bad. So Matt, what do you think? Are you going to give us a thumbs up or thumbs down? Thumbs up, Tracy?
I give you the thumbs up.
All righty. And it was pretty long, but there's a lot to cover here. And I think people are going to like this. So that's it for today on the Working Genius Podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. And we'll talk to you next time. God bless.